This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Flower moon in Gemini. The moon is 8 days old. The synodic forecast says that now's the time to sow vegetables that produce internal seed-bearing fruits. Biodynamicists agree the moon in Gemini, that's an air sign. They also say flowering plants. And the sidereal forecast moon in Gemini, barren and dry. And it's a good time for promoting flower growth. That's it for both the traditional and the alternative forecasts. We want to move straight into news from around Cascadia. We've got an interesting piece here that was on the Lund Report website. This comes from the It's About Time department. The powerful insurance industry is right now the only business in Oregon that's exempt from the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. Senator Chip Shields and Representative Paul Holvey of Eugene introduced legislation, though, this week that would remove that exemption and allow the Attorney General and injured parties to sue. Insurance companies have been enjoying their special exemption from the law, which most other people and businesses have to obey, which allows them to act with impunity and reduces their incentive to pay out claims as warranted. If they commit fraud, they can't be sued by the Attorney General under any tort or statute. The Portland Consumer Advocacy Group, Economic Fairness Oregon, points out that this new bit of legislation, and there's actually several bills here. This is not simply one bill. But the new legislation does not promote litigious behavior, but what it does do is encourage insurers to settle honest claims more expeditiously and fairly so that consumers can avoid the court system. And of course, those who are the opponents of these bills are going to make the dubious claim that these laws would create a logjam in the courts by encouraging people to sue. Well, it's very simple. The insurance companies just have to obey current laws and practice their business in an honest way. That's another way of avoiding the court system. These bills are House Bill 3160, Senate Bill 686. They roll the insurance into the definition of real estate goods and services so that the insurance industry is covered by the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. And then there's House Bill 2525 and Senate Bill 513. That allows the Attorney General and third parties who are injured by an insured person to be compensated for damages. There's a fifth bill, Senate Bill 514, which further lays out the process an insurer must go through before denying a claim. That should be an interesting fight. And we have also looking at Idaho, a bit to the east, the Idaho State Senate panel has introduced a bill that seeks to bar state and local law enforcement officials from aiding and abetting, if you will, the federal government is indefinitely detaining American citizens without charges. The measure got its first hearing in the Senate State Affairs Committee on Monday. Idaho Senator Monty Pierce says that this is an important piece of legislation. It's vital. It's needed to help Idaho preserve its constitutional rights. It's a response to the provision, of course, as many listeners know, in the National Defense Authorization Act that, in fact, allows indefinite detention of some, as they say, terrorism suspects. But that term terrorism has been stretched and expanded and shaped to cover just about anyone that is an inconvenient obstacle to the powers that be continuing to do what they do in the face of public opposition in many cases. The Columbia River more problems there. President Dwight Eisenhower signed the Columbia River Treaty with Canada. 52 years later, it's a different story. Scientific models predict that now we've got rising temperatures and reduced snowpack. So what we wind up with, less water during seasonal runoffs. And the bad, really bad news here is the water is a whole lot warmer. And that's very hard on fish. The original treaty created a massive system of dams for flood control and electricity. But now with our changing weather, it might mean fewer fish and it might damage the river's ability to feed turbines. So we're getting rid of dams, but the real damage is to fish habitat when we actually do not know what kind of damage that warming water in the Columbia River system is going to do. There are simply too many variables. We've gone in way too deep, and we're not going to be able to back out of this one very easily. Again, more from that front, more of science gone awry, and people being a little bit hasty in adopting ideas without seeing exactly where they're going or without taking into account the many variables. There are, Oregon is right now a hotbed of activity in the fight against genetically engineered crops. In Jackson County in particular, in southern Oregon, and citizens have successfully achieved getting a GE crop ban on the May 2014 ballot. That's something. Citizens in four other Oregon counties are also hard at work on similar crop bans. The local policies have been instrumental in eliminating genetically engineered crops in other states. And in fact, several counties and cities in California, Hawaii, Washington, and Maine have already adopted policies to ban growing GE crops in their counties. Oregon should be allowed the same level, of course, of local control as other states. Local policies, though, are in jeopardy because, of course, the biotech industry-backed bill in the Oregon Senate, that's 633, that and strips counties of their ability to craft appropriate seed policies. 633, in fact, bestows exclusive regulatory power over seeds and products of agricultural seed to this state. And you know what that means. Very often the state is too quick to embrace the timber industry and other policies which have resulted, in fact, destruction of salmon habitat. So we'll see where that goes. Sometimes you have to wonder about Oregon's claim to be the green state. We want to speak with, we're going to speak now with go to a national story because there are rumblings across the country. And we are going to be speaking with Mary Botari with PR Watch, a part of the Center for Media and Democracy, about a threat, in fact, to Social Security and what the swindle actually is. And I think that we don't use that word swindle lightly in this case. I believe we have Mary Botari right now. Good morning, yeah, Mary. Yeah, the term swindle, one doesn't want to invoke that lightly. What actually is happening here? What is the swindle?
Well, what we were talking about today on PRWatch.org, our main website, is all this conversation that's going on in Washington, D.C. about a grand bargain on the deficit. Both Republicans and Democrats keep talking about a grand bargain, and we did an investigation recently into the billionaires and millionaires who are funding a new big effort on achieving a grand bargain, which is really a different word for an austerity budget for the United States, an austerity budget that would include cuts to Social Security and Medicare, cuts to Medicaid. And we found out that the billionaire Pete Peterson, who earned all his money on Wall Street, is actually funding this effort to the tune of $500 million over the past 5 years, and he has all the Inside the Beltway elite singing out of his hymnal right now.
Yeah, Pete Peterson is someone that it would be behooveless to take a really long, hard look at the way that he did, become a Wall Street billionaire, is quite a piece of work. So what's the thinking here? I understand from what I see and on the PR Watch website, the workers pay into the Social Security system, but then how is the swindle working on the receiving end of it, the people who've been...
Well, you know, the Koch brothers get a lot of attention, and some of those, like, Soros gets a lot of attention. Well, move over, Koch brothers and Soros, because Peterson is actually one of the most politically involved billionaires we've seen for a long time. And he's funded a group called Fix the Debt, which is running around Washington, jumping up and down and telling people that the deficit and the debt are going to collapse the economy. And the thing that we need to be doing now is not creating jobs, but doing huge cuts to the deficit. And unfortunately, the most alarming thing that happened recently is that President Obama started echoing some of their concerns. He talks about cuts to entitlements, and just using that phrase, entitlements, is using the enemy's language. Social Security is not an entitlement program. People pay into it with every paycheck. Workers pay into it their entire lives. And as they get a little bit older, they get some of that money back, or they get all of that money back through the Social Security program. So we're very nervous that too many Democrats seem to be into this idea of a grand bargain, which we are now calling a grand swindle.
Thanks so much for that, Mary. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us this morning. Yeah, the website, of course, is you can find all of this at PR Watch. And I believe that there is also a quick and easy way to tell Congress what you feel about this this grand swindle that's coming down the pike and fast, too. Thanks again, of course, Mary Botaris with the Center for Media and Democracy's PR Watch. We're going to speak quickly with Butch Hollowell. Very, very happy to welcome you to the KBOO airwaves. Butch is the general counsel for the Detroit NAACP, and I'm going to turn it over to you, Butch. Go ahead. This, to me, it looks like a coup d'etat. Detroit's been taken over.
It looks like that to me, too. You know, this, what we're talking about is the emergency manager law, which allows the governor of the state of Michigan to send in an individual by dictate to dissolve local communities' elected leaders. And if you look at the language of the act, it says that this emergency manager shall rule by decree. I mean, literally, they've gone back to feudal language from monarchies. And so we are clearly of the view that this violates Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which prohibits the dilution of the vote, and second, that it violates the one-person, one-vote rule under the 14th Amendment. This is intended to be a part of the dismantling of democracy, which we've seen, you know, an avalanche of over the last couple of years. The 33 states have tried to take away the vote. Now, this one is a direct assault on the city of Detroit. So our view is that we need to make sure that we fight this in the courts, on the streets. The governor has identified an individual that he wants to be as the emergency manager, who comes from the Jones Day law firm, whose biggest client is Wells Fargo, which is responsible for, they're the number one forecloser bank in the state of Michigan and the city of Detroit. He also represents Bank of America and Lehman Brothers, and these are the highest recipients of TARP funds, and they're the same ones who, by their conduct, caused the crash of the economy in the first place. Detroit doesn't need an emergency manager. Detroit needs a partner, similar to New York City, you know, when they ran into some budget difficulties in the 70s.
Butch, we're totally out of time, and I'd like to invite you back and to finish the conversation. What gets me is this: the new emergency manager is a diversity chairman at his firm, and it's a virtually all white firm.
And there's no diversity, Chairman, and there's no diversity.
There's got to be a sleeper job.
A quote on the firm's website says, well, that's not our strong suit. But, you know, Detroit is a very,
we're out of time.
Diverse place. And you need to, it shows you something about the priorities.
Thanks, Butch. More later. That was Butch Hollowell with the NAACP's and speaking of us from Detroit. This is Bina Cascadia for Wednesday, March 20th, 2013. Thanks, Kurt. Thanks, Kathleen Stevenson. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Flashpoints over 20 years of U.S. wars against Iraq. We'll continue our drumbeat coverage of the ongoing impacts of these deadly wars against that country. We'll take a look at how Bush and One lied us into the bloody wars. We'll feature an interview with an Iraq exile who will talk about the failure of the policy then and now. Continuing on now, we got a lot more. We got Barbara Lubin from the Middle East Children's Alliance in the studio. And, we're going to cover this clearly, and we're also going to talk about the media. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead in Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. And, we're talking about 10 years, the 10-year anniversary, but really, the U.S. has been making war on the Iraqi people for over 20 years and supporting a war and destruction in that country long before that. And we're going to talk about sort of the depth of suffering that has been caused by U.S. policy, both, of course, in Iraq and also among folks in the U.S. Joining us first is Rea Jarrar. He is an Arab American political advocate, media analyst, and architect. He has been in this country. He essentially went into exile from Iraq after the U.S. Went crazy for the second time in a massive bombing of that country. He's now working